Morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 5, Geographic Names at the Top Level Call on Wednesday, the 29th of November, 2017 at 0500 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now?
Yes, this is Susan Anthony.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who was that?
Susan Anthony, United States.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Salonieko Tamaniko Emerald calling in from Fiji. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll note that. Okay, and hearing no further names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. And with this, I will turn it back over to Olga. Please begin.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good night from Buenos Aires. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Olga Cavalli. I am from Argentina. I am one of the co-leads of this Work Track 5, and I will be leading the call today jointly with my colleague from London, Martin Sutton. So I will start today thanking you for being with us. We have a quite important group of colleagues joining. We have two of them in the audio bridge. And we have two main issues today to review for our call, but I would like to start reminding you that please remember to update your statement of interest or just prepare them if you haven't done so. We have checked the list, and there are several colleagues who have not completed the statement of interest. Please do so. That's important for our work as a group. And remember that, have that in mind. So one of the two things that we would like to, before moving ahead, I would like to apologize. In the first call we had 2 weeks ago, I was in an airport with a lot of noise and not very good connectivity. So I was only in the chat room of the Adobe Connect. I'm grateful for my other colleagues who were working in the leading the call. So this time I'm helping. The idea is that we rotate among ourselves, and the co-leads are active in different calls depending on the time. This is a quite interesting time in Buenos Aires. It's 2 a.m. The good thing at this time in my home office is that nobody is calling my mobile or nobody is coming around. So that's very good for me. So I will put all my attention in our call. So let's go to our third point in our agenda. We have been working on the terms of reference. You may recall from our last call that this is one of our tasks, the things that we had to develop. And we have been exchanging some ideas among the four colleagues. And yes, please remind to mute your microphones when you are not speaking. And we have come to the point that we have a text especially referring to the scope of the terms of reference that we would like to share with you and have feedback from you in relation with it and the different options that we have thought about. So thank you very much for Emily for putting for preparing the slides and for putting them on the Adobe room. So what I will do now, I will go through the text. There are three slides of three different parts of the scope, three paragraphs, and I will share with you what are they, and maybe then you can give us your feedback. I will open the queue for your comments. Of course, this will not stop here. Many colleagues were not perhaps able to join us at this time in this call, so we will open this possibility of you sending us comments for a while. But for those of you in the call, could be good, or you can speak up, raising your hand, or perhaps you can send your comments through the chat room. That could be also useful, so then we analyze all your feedback. So, hello, Sheryl, I see you're joining. Let's go to the first paragraph. I will read it. World Track 5 will focus on developing proposed recommendations regarding the treatment of geographic names at the top level, including both in ASCII and IBM form. I hear an echo. Evaluation criteria, potential grounds for approval, and objections, as well as addressing whether such names require consent or non-objection from applicable government authorities. So we gave some thought about this text, and we came to this proposal. The idea of having a footnote about the approval is because some of the potential applications may have different levels of different involvement of different authorities approvals. So this, we thought that that could be an option to be included as the first paragraph of the proposed text in the scope. Trying to read the text. Jeff makes a very important point. Bracketed terms are options that we discussed between the work track leads. Yes, exactly, Jeff. Thank you for that. So what you see in brackets, it's an optional text that we have to decide, but we wanted your feedback. So before giving you the floor, I will go to the next slide, the second paragraph. So the work track may make recommendations on policy and on implementation related to 2 and 3 letter codes on the ISO 3166-1 list, in brackets, and on other variations of country and territory names as defined in Module 2, Sections 2.2.1.4.1 in Applicant Guidebook 2012. And there's a footnote there. I will go to that in a minute. In addition, the work track may make recommendations to city, state, region names, and other names that are deemed to be geographic in nature. And in brackets, it says, this may include but not be limited to geographic features such as rivers, mountains, valleys, lakes, etc., including names with an economic or cultural significance, such as geographic indicators and geographic features such as rivers, mountains, valleys, lakes, etc. There are two footnotes. The first footnote is about the reference in the applicant guidebook that talks about country names. It's suggested that we include this as a reference to what it's stated in the applicant guidebook in 2012 about this issue. And then the second one is about the definition of geographic indicators in the WIPO website. I'm trying to read if there are any comments in the chat room. Okay, let's go to the third one. The third slide, please. Thank you very much. So the third one says, it's about the scope again. The work track will take cognizance, that's really difficult for me. The work track will take cognizance of previous work in ICANN regarding geographic terms, including those that have taken place previously in the GNSO and the cross-community working group on the use of country and territory names and the previous processes and procedures contained within the final applicant guidebook for the 2012 round of new GTLDs. Broader discussions about jurisdictions of supporting organizations and advisor committees of the scope and distinctions between GTLDs and CCTLDs and the allocation of second and third level domains are specifically out of scope for this work track. So this is the text for the scope. As you have seen, there are some text in brackets that we have been talking about, and we haven't decided yet which would be the final text to be agreed. So we would like to get your feedback about this. So I will open the queue now for your comments. It could be both in the chat or raising your hand. We only have 1 hour, so I will give some minutes to this issue, and then we will move to the next point of the agenda, which is number 5, the presentation of the risk-based approach. So I will see my dear colleague Caboose in the queue. Caboose, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody. I have no problem with the first nor with the second. If there is no difficulties for anyone else, I have some comment on the third one when we say take cognizance of the previous book. I have some difficulty with that word. I suggest we consider, but not cognizance. This is consideration, because there are problems there. So we don't want to, by this call, approving whatever we've done. We have about 3 years, 4 years in the gap. We have a struggling with this situation, and we have difficulties. More than 45 countries have difficulties with that. So we can't take cognizance. We take, we'll consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I couldn't hear you very, very clearly. I'm sorry, I'm on my phone. For some reason, my audio in my...
Do you want me to repeat?
I don't know if you repeat. I cannot hear you very clearly.
I put in the chat, I have difficulty with cognizance in the third issue. I would suggest to replace that by consider.
Okay. Thank you for that. That was very clear. Thank you for... Apologies for asking you again to repeat. It's some sounds are not very clear. Any other comments? Jeff, you want to say something? Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. This is Jeff Newman. I just want to go back. There was a comment in the chat I wanted to make sure we addressed. So I think it was Farzana had said that jurisdiction of SOs and ACs, this is the first time I heard such a thing. You probably just mean mandate. So this is stemming from a paragraph on the last slide, slide 404, which says the broader discussions about jurisdiction of SOs and ACs and of the scope and distinction between GTLDs and CCTLDs, et cetera, are out of scope. What this is referring to is that there were discussions during one of the sessions in two meetings ago, I'm trying to remember, wherever we had that cross-community session where there were discussions about what should be classified as a GTLD versus what should be classified as a CCTLD and which supporting organization has exclusive power to develop policy based on the classification of the type of TLD. While we agree that those might potentially be issues in the broader scheme of ICANN, those issues were not contemplated to be discussed within this particular work track. So that's what was meant by jurisdiction of SOs and ACs. Hope that makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Other comments from the audience? So we will give you some time to review these slides. I know that is the first time that you see this text, and we are not expecting that you give all your comments now. But just I would like to consult with my dear colleagues how if we have a deadline for that. We may let you know during the next days how much time we have to decide on this text. I see two hands in the queue. I see Caboose and Paul. Please, Caboose, go ahead.
This time I speak a little bit more loudly. Apologies for that. I
don't
understand the meaning of this text. Discussion. But this broader discussion is out, but non-broader discussion, broader discussion is allowed. I don't understand broader discussions. About the jurisdiction of SOIC, I don't understand what you mean by jurisdiction of SO and AC when they put cover. And then of the scope and distinction between GTLD and CCLD. I don't understand why we don't want to do this. I don't need this sentence at all. It's creating problem for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Fabus. Paul, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Paul McGrady, for the record. Can someone explain, going to the paragraph one proposed text, can someone explain the, when we say approval, which may concern the ownership, business model, and jurisdiction of the proposed street? I guess I don't understand. What do we mean by that? Thank you.
Paul, I have some difficulties hearing you clearly. You mean the footnote and of the text in brackets that says approval? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, so there's two things. The first is the bracket, which has approval, which I understand to mean that somebody is proposing a change to what happened in the first round, namely moving away from a model where there are possible objections, and moving towards a model of seeking approval and also having an objection process. So I understand that. I don't know that I would agree with that. It's a pretty big change. Would love to hear more about that. But also, I guess I don't understand the footnote where it says approval which may concern the ownership, business model, and jurisdiction of the proposed registry. So are we, and again, in round one, the jurisdiction of the proposed registry, as far as I know, was never an issue that's new. Business model, as long as it was not illegal business model, I don't know of any objections based upon that, or I should say any need to seek approval for that. There was approvals as to ownership, namely individuals cannot be registries, but other than that, and board members couldn't have particularly poor backgrounds. But those are not really issues related to geographic terms. So whoever drafted footnote one, if they could explain what they're trying to get to in that, because I think it's just not clear what it means. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. The second part of you speaking was much clearer than the first one. Thank you very much. As Jeff rightly points in the chat, the person that suggested this text is not in the call now, but I understand that there are some doubts and there are some suggested changes to this text. So we will take note of this and we will work on that. I have four colleagues in the call. Paul, this is an old hand. I have Martin, Christina, and Cavus, and I would close the queue because then we have other things to review, and we are almost 23 minutes on our call. Martin, good, very early morning for you. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was just going through the comments because we asked people to put in comments in the chat as well. So just picking up on some of these, or at least one from Liz Williams about we need to think about unintended consequences of being too broad in scope and need to find consensus on the basis of reasonably objective rationales and think about impacts on potential impacts. And we'll also need to think about and one might instruct future evaluators to avoid contention or litigation. So the basis of this is, I'm just wondering if Liz could expand on that from the text that's been presented. Is there anything specific that she's referring to that she feels is too broad in scope? Or otherwise, is that something that can be followed up with just to make it clear as to where there's concerns with the scope? Thank you.
Thanks to you, Martin, and thank you for helping me with the chat. Christina, good morning for you. Good night.
Go ahead. Thank you. Thank you. Christina Rosette, Amazon Registry, for the record. I'm actually going to go farther than Paul in terms of my concerns about the bracketed language on paragraph one. The entire model for the previous round of new GTLDs was based on a kind of philosophical basis that an applicant that met the technical criteria, the financial criteria, and the kind of overall applicant criteria in terms of being a legal entity and some of the other points that Paul pointed out, that an applicant that met all those criteria would be awarded the applied for TLD unless there was an objection through the objection process or string contention or, you know, some kind of objection speaking broadly. The insertion of approval really flips that model on its head, and I don't think that is an appropriate change because then it takes us back to kind of the 2003 round where applicants had to prove to ICAM that, you know, not only was the TLD that they wanted, quote unquote, a good one that should be added to the route, but that they were the appropriate applicant to operate it. And quite frankly, if we are going to go down this route, I think you can't have this approval and criteria limited to just geographic names. I think you would then need to take this back to all of the other work tracks and have them consider it broadly. And I think that would be extraordinarily counterproductive. So I feel very strongly that this language should not go forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Christina. Kamus?
Yes, two questions are raised. One is getting agreement. Someone referred to that applicant, for instance, from whom we should get the agreement, or that Berlin, for instance, whether name the country, whether that's the capital of the country, or other cities all around the world. These are the two questions to be discussed. However, I have serious difficulties with the people proposing some changes to the approval or agreement or consent of the country. This is important. I don't understand what is the problem. That is the issue that we have started problems some several years ago. This agreement or approval or consent of the country is essential. No doubt those issues like that Africa, that Asia, or that so on and so forth yet to be discussed. What are the governments involved? So that are the questions valid. And that capital city or that city that also involved. If you say that Berlin is the country ABCD, but it is the capital of the Federal Republic of Germany. So who we have to get the agreement? But I don't want to change the term agreement. Agreement, approval, consent, all of them are the same and must be the same. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kavis.
Hi, Olga.
Sala, you want to say something?
Yes. Yes, thank
Please
you.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Salanieta Kamanikamo for the record. I'd just like to follow up on the immediate past speaker and in relation to geographic names and having consultations and approval by the regions affected and concerned. I sort of agree with that, but happy to put something on the mailing list later pertaining to this particular matter, knowing the time frame that we have. Thank you, Olga.
Thank you very much, Sala. Jeff, you want to say something? And you're the last one in the queue, because then we have to move forward.
Yes, thank you. This is Jeff Newman. I just want us to just kind of go back a step real quick and just to say that the scope for the terms of reference is not the discussion we're having is not trying to find a solution to the ultimate question. It's really to define the scope of what the questions will be, what the discussions will eventually be. So while the discussion is very fruitful as to whether certain people think approval should be required or and others that think that approval should not be required, those are the discussions we will have. What we're looking at here is the scope itself broad enough so that we can have those discussions? I think the reason why some of the leads agreed with this language, or I should say disagreed with this language, is not because they didn't want to discuss whether certain applications may or may not require consent. It's just that approval is also subsumed into the words evaluation criteria and also into the last part of that sentence, which says, as well as addressing whether such names require consent or non-objection from applicable governmental authorities. So my interpretation of why some of the leaders put that language in bracketed is not because they didn't want to discuss whether certain things require consent or don't. It's just that that language may have been, number one, redundant to language that's already in there, and number two, it may have implied, I think, I can't remember who made this comment, but it may have implied that we are answering the question, which is that approval is needed, when we haven't yet even started talking about the questions that we're asking. So the word approval seems to imply a solution in the question itself, and we're trying to stay away from answering questions right now, just defining what those questions are. Sorry for taking so long. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Yes, this is exactly what I wanted to explain, so you did it very clearly. And we will close the queue about this issue now. You will have the text for sending us your comments. And the idea is, as Jeff said, to define the scope, not to resolve how we will deal with all these things now. Thank you for that. And for some of you, I have difficulties in hearing clearly because I'm using my phone, not the Adobe Connect. So my apologies if I sometimes have to ask you to repeat again because I cannot hear what you're saying clearly. We will move now to our next agenda item, which is the presentation of the risk-based approach. So for that, I will give the floor to our colleague, Martin Sutton. Martin, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Okay, we've got the slides here now, so thank you. So based on our previous call, this is a follow-on to really dig a bit deeper on what a risk-based approach is and how it would be applied to this particular work track activities. So to start with, we could have taken similar approaches as before with the CCBG and some of the processes that led up to the applicant guidebook. The only issue there is that seems to have led to a lot of issues being unresolved. So we wanted to try and take a step back and consider a different way that we could approach this activity amongst us across the work track five. So in here, I'm just going to talk through what is a risk-based approach so it's clear and that there's no sort of strange scientific aspects to it, why we could use that for the work track five and how that can be applied. And then I'll talk a little bit more detail about things like a risk register and how to address some of the risks as we go through the work track five discussions.
and then talk about a very high-level plan as to how we could accommodate this within the proposed timeline that was covered at our last call. So if I could just go to, oh great, first slide here. So risk management is essentially a tool to help organizations evaluate risks effectively. It's something that can be a living document, if you like, where as risks evolve, which they inevitably do, you can refer back to this process and make some adjustments. So in terms of policy development, it could be a useful tool going forward as well. But the whole intention here is to really take away the, what I've termed here is gut sense and subjectivity in some of perhaps our previous discussions and try to introduce a more guided and informed decision-making process. So here I'm just trying to sort of take away any of the sort of scientific terms. Typically within risk management, you hear the terms identifying risks, what the impact could be, the likelihood of those threats, and the mitigation of those risks. In simple terms, it's the what, why, and hows is what we're looking for here, and then that translates easily into a policy-type terminology. And so in between here, I've just sort of posed the questions that these really tease out, which is what are we trying to prevent and or who are we trying to protect? So that would be the area where we initially identify the risks that we're trying to treat. We would then move on to this why area, which covers impact and likelihood. And the questions that would be teased out there is why are we trying to prevent the risk? So that's understanding, you know, is this going to lead to some catastrophic event or is it going to lead to multiple smaller issues that occur on a frequent basis, and so that we can try and prioritize and adjust how we manage those risks, which is coming on to the how. So there's lots of things that we can do to mitigate risks, and we need to look at the suite of controls that perhaps already exist within the policy and the AGB, or whether there's any gaps that we would like to make more effective and introduce other controls. You go to the next slide, please. So why use this approach? So as I mentioned earlier, we've tried some other approaches in the past and they haven't been entirely fruitful. They have obviously opened up the discussions and try to tease out the positions that are sort of entrenched within certain groups and within the different constituencies that exist in the ICANN community. So taking that step back and really looking at what are the risks that we are trying to deal with here and understanding and mitigating those risks would be, as far as we're concerned, a different approach that we can introduce to help resolve and move away from entrenched positions that may exist within the various constituencies within ICANN. And then that translates, as we go through that process, into a policy document, clearly articulating the what and why, and in turn, how that can be implemented. And with the risk register, which I'll refer to in a minute, it does make it a useful tool to reconsider and adjust policies as more evidence comes to light or different risks emerge. There is something that is easy to refer back to and consider how to make adjustments that would be effective in mitigating any future risks. We go to the next slide, please. So just to reinforce this is how do we apply the risk-based approach to work track 5. So within the scope, which is obviously what we've been talking about, and there are, you know, some debates still to be had to make that scope workable for work track 5, but we've already got a core set, I would say, of areas to at least begin those discussions and identify the risks. So that shouldn't prevent us from taking that first
leak into core work. We would then assess the risk. So looking at, is the occurrence of something that we do not want to occur a high impact? And what is that impact and consequences of occurrence? And is it something that's likely to occur frequently, or is it something that is a perceived risk that may or may never occur in the future? And looking at those risks then is to make some judgment on, you know, what is acceptable? Is there a certain tolerance that we would be able to apply in terms of to avoid introducing sort of negative aspects of impact on competition and innovation, for instance? So then we can take that forward to looking at how best to address those risks, taking all those considerations into those discussions, and we either decide, you know, some risks are just so big, we've got to eliminate those risks and prevent them from occurring full stop. Or there is ways that we can actually manage those risks and through a process of perhaps monitoring and enforcement, allow those mechanisms to work. Okay, and if we move to the next slide, please. So I just wanted to illustrate how this could start to look and feel as we go through the process. As we identify the core risks that we're trying to deal with, we can then look at the severity, you know, what would be the consequences, and the potential causes that trigger those consequences. And then we can start to add some kind of objective analysis to this, which starts to put through some kind of scoring mechanism. So if it's a catastrophic event, you know, that would achieve a higher score rating for impact. It may also, if it's something that could occur frequently, also incur a high score. And just multiplying those through, you would then see which of these risks need the most attention. And that would actually help prioritize our work and effort as to which things must be addressed and discussed further, and others that we might be able to hold back on until we've actually dealt with the more higher risk cases. So I think it would then help us to, one, prioritize our work effort. It then creates a living document that can be used in the future to evidence, you know, how effective have these controls been? So it's kind of a backwards-looking effect of just checking that what we've done works as we intended, but also to think about how these may be impacted with future and emerging risks that we become aware of in the future. As an example, and not tied to geographic terms, but, you know, something like GDPR, is something that's hit the industry at a stage where they have to start thinking about adjusting or exploring how to deal with that under the current controls and agreements that are currently in force. So this would be a tool that could be used to identify where those risks are and to adjust those in recognition of something that is emerging in the future. Okay, if we move to the next slide, please. I'd just like to raise the point that we probably have a suite of controls already that we will be able to think about applying or applying differently as we go through the process for Work Track 5. I've highlighted some here, and they're not all the different controls, but we already have what I would term as pre-application controls, application process controls, and post-delegation controls. Under pre-application, we've got some either policies or what was built into the guidebook, a sort of blocking not permitted control, or restricted where there needs to be some pre-application conditions met. Through the application process, I think it was highlighted earlier through the comments on the, as we were discussing the terms of reference there, there's a whole suite of checks and evaluations that occurs during this process, as including the string similarity checks and then confusion aspects that are applied there. Objection processes are available, and other controls such as the PICs that were introduced as well. And then post-delegation, so this is more of a sort of monitoring and enforcement area, which relies upon the GTLD registry agreements, compliance checks, dispute mechanisms like the PIC-DRP. There's also some external aspects here, which is beyond perhaps ICANN remit, but you know, there is law enforcement aspects to consider here that also support the monitoring and control of or enforcement of activities. So this is just to try and illustrate that when we get to the stage of trying to address the risks that we've identified and are concerned about, that we already have a suite of controls that we could look at and see if they are effective in doing those tasks or whether we need to adapt or apply them in a different way for the different geographic type issues that we're going to discuss. And at that stage, it's probably at a point where once we've identified those risks and looking at the mitigation points, we would go in a reverse order. So we'd look at the post-delegation controls to see if they are effective in themselves to manage those risks. And if we feel that they are insufficient, we can move through to the application process controls to see where they could be applied effectively to manage those risks. And then if it's deemed that those risks are still too high and vulnerable to be met by those particular controls, we move into the pre-application process area to apply stronger, more block-type mechanisms for those application types. So that's just to illustrate how that sort of the sort of end stages of the work would probably be approached. Okay. And then if we could just move to the next slide, please. There should be another one in between. Should be a time frame? Maybe not. Okay. Let's leave it here for the moment. Then I thought there was a draft work plan high level as well for delivering the preliminary report, which I will just talk through then instead. So the first stage, I would say, of a deliverable for Work Track 5 will be the preliminary report. And we spoke about this at the last meeting, and that would be to aim for April, end of April, to deliver a preliminary report. In order to do that, the areas that I would think are two chunks of work that we need to do would be throughout the remainder of November through to January is to identify those risks, assess the risk based on the available information, and perhaps utilize the ICANN reviews that have already been undertaken. And that will help us to prioritize our efforts on those risks. We then can apply that methodology through to assessing the risks against different types of geographic terms. So that probably needs to be, you know, defined better in the scope of work that we're trying to do here, so that we can then go through things like, you know, starting at two-character country codes, three-character country codes, country names and territories, and so forth, and applying, you know, a variance in those risks when you look at those different aspects of geographic terms. Then from the end of January, say from February through to March, it would be looking at determining the suitable risk mitigations and controls, which I alluded to earlier, which is, you know, working back through these different controls that we've got. Are they adequate? Do we have any gaps that could benefit from filling with a different type of control? So that would then end up with either a report that is produced in April posing questions. It could, if we've worked through some and are comfortable that there are recommendations already emerging, we could include those in the report. But that would then give us the opportunity to meet that timeline but splitting the sort of workload into two key areas of identifying and assessing the risks, and the second phase of looking at the mitigations and controls that should be applied to those risks. So I'll stop there for now to check. I haven't been reading through all the comments coming through, so I'll take a moment to read through the comments and take a cue. So we've got Caboose first of all. Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, Martin, thank you very much for this. We have this topic not only in this area, everywhere. We start to discuss an issue. We have risk-based management, risk-based approach, and so on and so forth. It is good, but perhaps we don't know where we start. It seems to me that you want to start from this and go to the rest of the things. That is not yet agreed. What I suggest that I don't know whether the slide that you have shown, you have already discussed with the three other people or four other people in the management team, in order that whether you raise it at this stage, because you're opening a way, a channel that we may have end to something or we may end to nothing. So it is a risky again to start from this area, risk-based management, risk-based approach. It's a very, very difficult and requires a lot of expertise that some of us may not be in that expertise. And I remind myself the jurisdiction that they started to some philosophical arrangement. At the end, it was not useful. We come to the main point that what is the issue of the venue of law and what is the issue of the choice of law. But we discussed 1.5 years for nothing. So please kindly reconsider the matter, the procedures that we have to do, where we have to start. I have certain difficulty to start with the risk-based management or risk-based approach. It would get a lot of problems and difficulties and time-consuming. Please kindly first consider in the management team whether everybody agrees with that, and then before getting to any discussion whether people agree, to start from that point. And by the way, thank you very much again for all the work that you have done. Thank you.
Hi, Olga. Sala here. Just a short intervention.
Martin, Sala is on the phone bridge. You want to make a comment?
Thank you.
Go ahead, Sala. Sala, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me? Sala here.
Yes, we can hear you.
Wonderful. Okay, very quickly. Sala Nieto Tamanika, I'm over for the transcript. So I like the risk-based approach that's currently up for dialogue. One of the things I think that should be considered in terms of the approaches, it's probably mentioned already, but just in case I missed it because of the connection, intermittent connection, just the risk to the diverse stakeholders that are involved, both in terms of application and both in terms of parties affected who may or may not, or who may raise objections pertaining to geographic names. Obviously, in previous instances, we have a historical record. At some stage, there were unforecasted risks, but in a sense, we have the benefit of retrospection and so are able to factor that into the modeling process. So that's all I wanted to comment on. Thank you, Olga.
Thank you, Sana.
Thank you very much. It's Martin here. I'm sorry, but for Caboose and the last points there, the line that I've got is really bad. So I'm afraid that I have been unable to decipher a lot of what was said. Could I please ask you to submit what you've just said to the list so that we can actually take that into consideration as we move forward. So Caboose as well, please, if you could just articulate some of the points that you made during the your last points, that would be very helpful to take on board. I think in terms of gathering some of the comments that I heard from Caboose was concerned about the risk-based approach.
I believe that most of the activities before now have actually started to go down that route. This just applies a different structure, I suppose, to that process. A lot of the time, the questions are, what are we trying to do here? Why are we trying to do it? And based on what evidence? So in simple terms, that is what this approach is trying to do. I don't think it's rocket science in any way, but it actually just tries to do it in a very orderly manner so that across the different constituencies of ICANN, there is a clearer understanding of why we would be dealing with a matter in such a way. And for future proofing, it gives those that need to review and assess this in the future a better quality of information to refer back to as to why this was implemented in the way it was. So I just like to just comment that back. This is an opportunity to talk about this approach. We do want your feedback. So, you know, if there's huge objections to this, we'll take that on board. What I would also like to hear then is, what are the alternative approaches that you think would be suitable for this work track then to adopt? So if anybody's got any comments on that point, I'd be happy to take those now or add them to the chat so that we can take that on board. And then I'm conscious of time, so if nobody's in the queue. Ching, okay, so likelihood part is when you look at what aspects of the risk are how they could be triggered. So I won't go through an example, not at this stage, but it's how frequently is that likely to occur? So is this something that could, if you allow no controls to be in place, is the negative impact something that's going to occur, you know, regularly, or is it something that will be 1 in 10 years? You know, that's where you try to then weight down the risk priority. So if it's a catastrophic event, but it's only going to happen once in 100 years, in all likelihood, and that's where there would be discussion, then that is probably, you know, that would score a 5 on impact, a 1 on likelihood. It would have a low score on likelihood. So it'd bring it down in terms of an overall score and prioritization. Thanks, Cole. Yes, probability. Okay. So I've got nobody in the queue. I think we will we'll take on board any further comments coming through the chat, and we'll review those. And without any further cue, then I shall pass back to Olga.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you very much. This very interesting presentation by Martin is about having an informed decision-making process for our work. It's a proposal, so please take a look at it. There are many valuable comments in the chat. And also, I will follow up with Sarah that she was in the phone bridge and I had some difficulty to hear her clearly. So please think about this. Send comments to the email list as much as you can and as detailed as you can so we can work on that for the next call. And we have like 2 minutes left. Are there any administrative issues that we should have in mind, Terry, Steve, please help me with that.
I think we had the any other business. We had the buddy update. Emily might.
Emily, and I see Jeff is raising his hand. Emily, can you help us with that?
Sure, Olga. Hi, everyone. This is Emily Barabas from staff. So I'm just going to provide a brief update. Last week on our call, we discussed the possibility of having a buddy system or an informal system of mentorship for new members who are unfamiliar with the PDP process. So we sent out an email asking people who might be willing to serve as informal mentors if they could reach out to us, and we got some interest, which is great. We got 11 people volunteering. So the next step is going to be to reach out to the working group, or I'm sorry, the work track more broadly, and see if there are individuals who would like to have a buddy or a mentor to help them along the way with the process and answer questions informally. So look out for an email today about that, and it will explain the next steps. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to staff. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Emily. I see rising hands from Jeff and Taboos. Jeff, go ahead, please.
Yes, thanks, Jeff Newman. Just to kind of follow up and try to close this call. So there is a the next call of this group will be next week. I believe it's December 6th, and then another call on December, I want to say the 20th. What we would probably ask for is that we're going to send out the terms of reference right after this call or shortly after. And what we're going to ask for is that if you could think about, start the discussions on the list, we can go over some comments for next week's call. I think that that'll be helpful, but we won't make comments due until the following call after that, which would be December 20th. So again, while comments won't be due for a few weeks on the terms of reference, the earlier you can get comments in, like in the next few days, just questions or comments, then we can put those on the agenda to actually discuss during the next phone call. So I just would put in a plea to use the lists to make comments, and then we can make sure that we bring those up as discussion items on the call next week. Back to you, Olga. Sorry.
Thank you. No, that's perfect. You read my mind. I was going to say exactly this. Thank you, Jeff. Caboose, and then we have to wrap up because it's the hour. Caboose, go ahead.
Yes, Olga.
I cannot hear you, Caboose.
You discuss it among yourselves to see whether it's the right moment or the right topic to take it before bringing that. The meeting, such as this risk-based management or risk-based approach, which I have certain difficulty with that at this stage, so starting with that. This is one point that really... And second, would it be possible, Secretariat, send the email address or address of the TAC file in an email to all of us? It was in the chat, but I couldn't copy it, so we need to have the address of where we have to send our comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Caboose. If there are no other requests for the floor, I would like to thank you all. Thanks, Steve, Terry, Emily, for your help. Thanks to my colleagues. Thanks to Jeff and Cheryl. And please send your comments to the email list. We will meet in a week and hopefully having some summary of all the comments received, and so we can move forward. Thank you. Thank you very much. Have a nice rest of the night, morning, week, or evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Olga.
Ciao.
Bye-bye. Bye, Terry. Bye, everybody.